The next argued case is number 21-2095, Dion against the United States. Mr. Clemente, when you're ready.
May it please the Court, Michael Clemente for Mr. Doyon. Mr. Doyon's combat-induced PTSD is well documented, and it is not disputed by the government. But in 1968, the Navy misdiagnosed him with a personality disorder, which was incorrect even under the standards at the time, and discharged him on that basis. What happened to Mr. Doyon has happened to a number of other veterans, and that is why over the past decade or so, the Department of Defense and Congress have crafted a solution to this problem, which is to make correction boards apply liberal consideration to veterans like Mr. Doyon who were discharged with, they have claimed for PTSD related to discharge, but were discharged on some other basis. And the decisions below either ignored or dismissed that solution that was crafted by Congress and by the Department of Defense. And for that reason, they should be reversed.
Is it your understanding that the CURTA memo expanded the rights or opportunities for veterans with PTSD compared to the Hagel memo?
Yes.
And is it your understanding that 1552H is essentially a complete reflection of the CURTA memo, essentially a codification of it? Or are there differences between 1552H and the CURTA memo?
I think, to your second question, I think that's less clear. The CURTA memo has a lot of very specific details on how to apply liberal consideration that aren't provided in the statute. The statute is very broad. It says that liberal consideration applies to a claim under this section, that's 1552, for review of a discharge. And so this board that Mr. Doyon was before, the VCNR, corrects a variety of different records. And one of them is the discharge record, and that's the DD-214 form. And on that form, there's a series of sections. This is Appendix 1102. I think it's instructive even to...
Before you get there, yes. I want to also ask about the applicability of 1552H to the facts here. As I understand it, 1552H was enacted after Mr. Doyon's petition was filed at the VCNR. So generally, there's a presumption that statutes are applicable prospectively, not retroactively, unless Congress states otherwise. Would that apply here?
There's no retroactivity problem here for a couple of reasons. And first, I would just say that the government hasn't actually made this argument. It has referenced retroactivity in a sentence, but never even argued that there's a retroactivity problem.
Something we have to wonder about.
Definitely. And on that front, I would say that this court's decision in the Rodriguez case explains when a statute has a retroactive effect. And so just backing up a little bit, in terms of retroactivity, there's an initial question about whether applying a statute would have a retroactive effect in a particular case. And then if it does, there's the secondary question of, is that permissible? Did Congress authorize that? And there's where the presumption against retroactivity occurs. You don't presume that Congress intended a statute to apply retroactively unless Congress expressly said so. And then a third level of retroactivity analysis would involve there's a constitutional challenge to the statute or something like that under the ex post facto clause. In this case, we're at step one because there is no retroactive effect. And that's because the 1552H changed the requirements for the BCNR and how it was supposed to dispose of Mr. Doyon's case. And that had not yet happened. And so under the Rodriguez case, this court explained how we understand when a statute would have a retroactive effect. And it says if the event is already completed before the statute is enacted. And here the event, the party that the 1552H applied to is the BCNR, and it had not yet rendered its decision. So we don't think that there's any retroactivity problem or that the government raises any argument along those lines.
I know the government argues that the CURTA memo was a clarification of the Hagel memo. But the CURTA memo unless I missed something, doesn't reference the Hagel memo. And quite the contrary, references a December 2016 department announcement of renewed efforts to ensure that veterans were aware of the opportunity to have their discharges and military records reviewed. I looked at that December 2016 announcement, and that's just a very general announcement, doesn't mention the Hagel memo, a very general announcement talking about how the Department of Defense is going to take another look at all of these records to see whether the discharges and military records were properly accounted for PTSD. So I get the impression that the CURTA memo is not necessarily constrained in any way by the Hagel memo.
So I agree that the CURTA memo is not constrained at all by the Hagel memo. And even under the government's own view, which is that it was clarifying the Hagel memo, the government concedes on page 31 of its brief that it expanded the Hagel memo, as it has to, because the Hagel memo was focused on PTSD. The CURTA memo also includes traumatic brain injury. It also includes military sexual trauma. So there's a number of ways where it unambiguously expanded the CURTA memo.
And you agree that if all you had was the Hagel memo, then you can't win. Because the Hagel memo is specifically about upgrading discharge status.
We agree that the Hagel memo focuses on characterization of service and upgrades the characterization of service. And that's why we're relying mostly on the CURTA memorando and then separately on the statute 1552H, which are two separate sources of authority that were not followed below. On the CURTA memo, I think two really important parts that the government has not really been able to fully respond to. This is Appendix 1943, paragraphs 20 and 24. And there, the CURTA memo explains very expressly what it applies to. And it explains in paragraph 20 what it means by the phrase discharge. The government argues that the CURTA memo only applies to upgrades and characterization of service. And as this court knows, characterization of service is a term of art about whether one's service was honorable or dishonorable or several other categories. But the CURTA memo doesn't say that. It defines discharge as including not just characterization of service, that term of art, but also the narrative reason, and the separation code, and the reenlistment code. And then if there were any doubt in paragraph 24, the CURTA memo says, these guidance documents are not limited to under other than honorable condition discharge characterizations, but rather apply to any petition seeking discharge relief, including, and then it gives a list of items that it includes. Now, this guidance is directed to the board, the BCNR, which is a corrections board, and it corrects records and a variety of different kinds of records. So there's records about promotions, records about medals and commendations, and then there's a discharge record, and that's Appendix 1102. It's the DD-214. And on that form, there's a series of discharge section and a series of boxes that correlate exactly with what the CURTA memo is talking about in paragraph 24.
So this is the form, DDR-214, that you want corrected?
The DD-214 is the form.
DD-214.
Yes.
And is it just this one field about reasons and authority?
Yes.
That's the only thing you want corrected.
That is the only way that Mr. Doyen can attain the relief that he's seeking, is to go to this board and to ask it to change that box to a different separation code. And the CURTA memo in those paragraphs 20 and 24 expressly says that it applies to the narrative reason, which is the box that we're referring to, and it also says it applies to the separation code. And what we're asking for is a change of the separation code. Also, in the title of the CURTA memo, it says that, and this is paragraph 1 of its instructions, it says that it applies to requests by veterans for modification of their discharges, due in whole or in part to PTSD. And that's exactly what Mr. Doyen is seeking. He's requesting a modification of his discharge due to PTSD. And so the board erred by not giving him liberal consideration.
Is there any legislative history suggesting that 1552H was an attempt to codify CURTA memo?
The legislative history on this is not particularly instructive because these amendments that happened over the course of about a decade happened through the National Defense Authorization Act bills. So there are these massive bills, and these were rider provisions in them. And so the government cites some legislative history which predates what we're discussing here, and it's legislative history following on the heels of the Hegel memo, which is focusing more on characterization of service. But
you're talking about 1553, right?
Well, yeah, so the government also, so the government's legislative history citations involve a variety, representatives from the government speaking about a variety of different boards at a variety of different times. But on the specific question with the legislative history of 1552H, we cite in our brief one example where this was leading right up to the adoption of 1552H in liberal consideration, where in a hearing, the member of Congress asked the corrections boards how they apply liberal consideration, and they gave an example where they increased a disability rating because of liberal consideration. And so also, if you look at this legislative history, which we're more than happy for the court to do, we don't think that's necessary given the plain text of 1552.
Yep.
But if the court were to look at it and actually look at the time period leading up to 1552, none of it's inconsistent with our position.
Before you run out of time, I want to talk to you about 1553, which uses basically identical language to the language in 1552H. And just as a straightforward, plain language argument that you have for 1552H, I understand it. And I understand why it seems broad enough that it would apply to Mr. Doyen's case. But the same language as in 1553, which is really about just the Discharge Review Board only. And if we were to conclude that all that the Discharge Review Board can do under 1553 using the exact same liberal consideration language in 1552H is to change discharge status, then why wouldn't we use the common statutory interpretation canon that identical language in two different provisions ought to be treated the exact same way? And so therefore, resulting in 1552H likewise being constrained to just modifications of discharge status.
A few points on that. One is that, as I understand the government's argument about 1553, my understanding is that they're saying that the phrase discharge or dismissal is a term of art. And because the DRBs, the boards under 1553, are largely limited to changes in characterization of service, that's not even what they're limited to. They can also change separation code for under the narrative reason, for instance, and they did that after the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So they're not, even that board isn't limited just to what the government's arguing, which is upgrades and characterization of service. But my understanding is their basic argument is this is a term of art from this other statute, but they cite no source at all interpreting discharge or dismissal as a term of art, meaning only upgrades and characterization of service. And in fact, the DRB regulations, the regulations for 1553, expressly define discharge and dismissal, and this is 32 CFR 724.107. The government cites this on page 24 of their brief. They don't actually quote it. They just say defining discharge. But if you look at that and you read the definition, and excuse me for reading a little bit of length here, but it says, by reason of usage, the term discharge is predominantly applicable to the separation of enlisted personnel for any reason, and the term dismissal to the separation of officers as a result of secretarial or general court martial action. In the context of the mission of the NDRB, the term discharge used here shall, for purpose of ease of expression, include any complete separation from the naval service. Other than that pursuant to the sentence of general court martial, the term discharge also includes the type of discharge and the reason or basis for that discharge. So,
okay, you've done a very thorough job of resisting the premise of my question. Okay. But putting that to the side, what if we're still stuck with thinking that 1553 is for something more specific and limited than what the BCNR can do under 1552H in terms of its stuff? It only updates or changes discharge status. Then is it still possible to read the liberal consideration provision in 1552H differently, more broadly, in terms of what kinds of remedies the BCNR can provide under that liberal consideration privilege in 1552H?
So it's definitely possible to read them separate, to read them differently, and it's because liberal consideration is a standard of review. And it's completely normal and understandable that different courts with different jurisdictions would apply a standard of review to different cases that they're allowed to hear. And the BCNR in 1552H1 says that it applies to any claim under this section, which is 1552. And 1552, that BCNR board can hear disability retirement claims. But the DRB can't. And that's just because of regulations that have been prescribed by the Secretary pursuant to the Secretary's general authority to prescribe regulations for the DRB's jurisdiction. That is not an interpretation of the meaning of discharge or dismissal. So there's, I think, a number of reasons why there's no inconsistency at all between liberal consideration being that standard of review being applied to the applications that the BCNR can hear under 1552 on the one hand, versus the more limited cases, that same standard being applied by the DRB, the more limited cases that they hear within their jurisdiction. If I could reserve the remainder of my time for that.
Thank you. We'll save you a little time. Ms. Speck.
Good morning, Your Honor. Elizabeth Speck for the United States. May it please the Court. The Court should affirm the decision of the Navy Corrections Board and the Court of Federal Claims. And there are several reasons. First of all, both the trial court and the board applied the correct standard. The liberal consideration standard does not apply to questions regarding fitness for duty. And I wanted to first address the idea that a discharge is a term of art, that is our argument, and it does not relate to disability relief. In terms of what the Discharge Review Board can do, we don't disagree that they could change a narrative reason for the discharge or a reenlistment code. The appendix talking about the changes to 1550, the legislative history that cited at Appendix 2232, which preceded the amendments to 1552H, talked about the fact that discharge petitions could encompass that, could encompass a change in the narrative reason for the discharge or a change in the reenlistment code. But the fact is, the Discharge Review Board does not have the ability to change a code to one related to a disability. And that is in a few places that we cited in our brief, specifically the Navy's regulation, which is 32 CFR 724.205A9, says that the Naval Discharge Review Board does not have authority to change a code to a medical code. And we also cited Gay versus the United States.
How is that consistent, though, with your earlier statement that the Discharge Review Board can change the narrative reason in a record?
Pardon me, Your Honor. There may be narrative reasons, for example, and these were cited in the list.
Narrative records would include, a modification to disclose or conclude there was a disability was the reason for separation.
First of all, Your Honor, we wanted to clarify that a disability retirement is not a complete separation from the armed services. So a disability retirement, even looking at the definition that is cited by the appellant in terms of a complete separation, when someone is retired for disability, they are placed on a permanent disability list. I think they would not dispute here. Mr. Doyen is looking for a disability retirement payment. Under 10 U.S.C. 1401, they still get paid. Under 10 U.S.C. 802, they are subject to court-martial. The fact is, under these, the codes, for example, looking at the joint appendix and some of the examples that were cited by the Navy at 2271 through 2273, they talk about the fact that you were given a code that was related to substance abuse, or you were given a code related to drunk driving. And looking at PTSD, perhaps you would maybe change the upgrade. You would say you're entitled to a general discharge, or perhaps there would be a different reason for separation. But it simply doesn't go into finding a medical reason for the separate for the. It doesn't go into, for example, just looking at the
state. It doesn't go into. Are you talking about the statute, or what are you referring to?
The statute, looking at review of a discharge or dismissal, and looking to what liberal consideration applies to. It's simply not considered discharge relief. The disability or the medical evaluation system is considered a separate process. For example, from what the discharge review boards do. And what is directed and what is being examined under Section 1552H and 1553.
What we have here is the BCNR, not the Discharge Review Board, right?
Yes, Your Honor, but it is identical language in the statute. So looking at the statute at 1552H, it typically caveats that section of H1 in terms of review of a discharge or dismissal, which is exactly the language that is used in 1553D3. And the simple fact is these two boards do have they do look at the same types of discharge claims. So you would be for up to 15 years, you would go to the discharge review board. After that, those same claims could be looked at or could be reviewed by the Naval Corrections Board.
Go ahead.
A quick question. Are you saying that the statutory authorization to the review boards excludes correction of this sort of error when there's a, let's assume that there is a clear or at least prima facie error, that correction of such errors are prohibited by statute?
Yes, Your Honor, for the discharge review boards.
It doesn't say that in the statute. As I recall.
Well, Your Honor, the case, and this is a Court of Federal Claims case, not a federal circuit, but it interpreted the 93 Fed Claims 681, 687.
You're saying it's an interpretation, not in the statute.
Yes, Your Honor, that was the interpretation of the statute interpreting discharge. I would also note the Department of Defense instruction, which specifically talks about the role of the discharge review boards. That's 1332.28 Enclosure 4. Talks about their authority in terms of characterization of honorable service. The Navy's regulation, we also cited the legislative history from the 1958 statute when it was first enacted, looking at discharge or dismissals. I'd note even in a case cited by the appellants, LaFrancois versus Mavis, this is in the facts, not in the court's analysis. But there, the discharge review board explained that when reviewing a discharge, and this is at 910 Federal Supplement 2D12, and this is page 15, when reviewing a discharge, the board does consider the extent to which a medical problem, diagnosed or undiagnosed, while on active duty might affect an applicant's performance and ability to conform to the military standards of conduct and discipline.
Are you reading from the statute?
No, Your Honor, I'm reading from a case that was from the law.
I guess I'm still confused by this argument of yours because you're really focusing on the Discharge Review Board's work and authority, and we're here looking at the Military Records Correction Board. And at bottom, we have to figure out what does 52H1 mean. It means, and when it says review the claim with liberal consideration to the claimant that PTSD potentially contributed to the circumstances resulting in the discharge or dismissal or to the original characterization of the claimant's discharge or dismissal. There seem to be two different things that you can consider. One is the original characterization of the discharge, which, as I take it, is what you think of as discharge honorable or less than honorable, there's general or something like that. But then there's the other angle, which is potentially contributed to the circumstances resulting in the discharge. And that seems to be the facts of what we have here with Mr. Doyon. So I guess what I'm wondering is, why do we have to read this statute as relegated to only discharge status modifications when the statute is plainly talking about two different thoughts?
Well, Your Honor, it's talking about review of a discharge or dismissal. And as we've explained, discharge is understood by the military service not to encompass disability claims for medical.
Can you just explain to me what these two different provisions inside of the liberal considerations section refers to? Contributed to the circumstances resulting in the discharge. What does that mean? Because it has to mean something different than, quote, the original characterization of the claimant's discharge.
Yes, Your Honor. I think the circumstances resulting in the discharge, for example, as the board looked in the examples that we cited in 2271, for example, in the first example, or let me actually go to the second one, they were looking at he was received a punishment for driving under the influence, or they may have received having a controlled substance. And so you're looking at whether that contributed to circumstances that resulted in a less than honorable discharge. So
here it's, you know, the provision is PTSD. It's not drunk driving. Whether PTSD contributed to the circumstances resulting in the discharge.
Yes, Your Honor, but under those examples, for example, they eventually did change, they did upgrade the discharge because they looked at the fact that he actually did have PTSD. So the fact was, at the time we discharged you, we thought it was due to drunk driving or having a controlled substance, or perhaps you committed some kind of misconduct. And looking at the fact that now we know you have a diagnosis of PTSD, then that would perhaps mitigate the misconduct or what you were removed for. And that's exactly what the Curta memo.
How is that different from we originally thought you had a personality disorder, but now looking backwards, when we understand better that you in fact had PTSD, that was actually a contributing factor to your discharge and your behavior?
Your Honor, they would certainly be entitled to have that reviewed by the corrections board. It would just not be with liberal consideration. The liberal consideration standard was intended to be applied in looking at a discharge review. And the discharge is, again, the discharge is complete separation. Here, looking at a disability retirement would not be complete separation. This is just a separate, the discharge process is distinct from the claim for disability reviews. And I think in terms of what liberal consideration was going...
Does medical retirement lead to discharge and separation?
It's not considered a complete separation because they are still, they are placed on a permanent disability list. They are still subject to court-martial under 10 U.S.C. Section 802. And under 10 U.S.C. 1401, they would still get paid. So they are not considered, if they get a disability retirement, they are not considered a complete separation.
Did this come up in the red brief? I mean, it certainly didn't come up in the claims court's decision.
We cited that, the claims court did not discuss, the claims court decision did not discuss the statute. We did not specifically discuss 802 or 1401. We took issue with the fact that this was not a complete separation. But I think I don't think Mr. Doyon's counsel would dispute that he is looking to receive a disability retirement payment. And again, that would just go to the fact that there's not a complete separation. And we're happy to provide these citations to the court if you would like them in a 28-J letter as well.
I suppose we could just conclude that 1552H applies or can apply to this situation or any situation where it appears somebody wants to modify the reasons for separation and then remand the case back to the claims court to determine whether medical retirement is actual grounds of separation, is because it sounds like what I'm hearing for the first time, the government believes it is not a grounds for separation.
It's not considered a complete separation. And I would also just point, in terms of looking at the statute, the court to a couple of other provisions of 1552 and 1553A, which were enacted in 2019, which I think further support the fact that Congress understood this to be related to a certain subset of the liberal consideration standards to apply to a subset of cases to only reviews of a discharge like the DRB would do. And that's 1552I1, which states that the number of claims considered by such board during the calendar quarter, they're required to make information available, including post-traumatic stress disorder or traumatic brain injury, is alleged to have contributed, whether in whole or part, to the original characterization of the discharge or release of the former member. Also looking at 1552B, it states that there, 4B, if a board established under this section does not grant a request for an upgrade to the characterization of a discharge or dismissal, that declination may be considered under section 1553A of this title. And then section 1553A talks about a review by the Secretary of Defense under 1552 and 1553 regarding the final review of a request for an upgrade in the characterization of a discharge or dismissal. So I think Congress understood that in enacting the amendments to 1552H, that it was simply making it consistent to what it had already enacted in 1553D, and looking at these questions related to discharge upgrades, and in mitigating the misconduct, which, as we've emphasized in our brief, is very much the focus of the Curta memo, looking at whether the misconduct was in fact mitigated by a condition such as PTSD or traumatic brain injury. If the court has no further questions, I see my time has expired.
Thank you, counsel. Rebuttal.
Is medical retirement a complete separation?
So as Your Honor noted, this is the first time we're hearing that argument, but even so, it shouldn't make any difference, because the discharge review board, the BCNR, which is actually the board that Mr. Delane was before, they review records, and the record is the DD-214. So whether it was a complete separation or not, it's the board's still authorized to grant and regularly does grant disability retirement. And this court also has overturned decisions of the board where it refused to grant disability retirement.
Hypothetically, if Mr. Doyen's records were to reflect that he wasn't discharged for a personality disorder, but instead his status has changed to medical retirement due to a disability, due to PTSD, would he be technically discharged still? Or would he not be discharged because it's not a complete separation?
So I think my response would be that it doesn't matter, because
the statute says discharge or dismissal, so it has to be one or the other.
This is a claim under this section for review of a discharge. And the discharge, it's a record, because the board only reviews records. That's all that it does. And the discharge record is the DD-214. So whether or not, as we heard for the first time today, that he's technically fully, completely separated or not, the way that he would still get that form of relief, disability retirement, is by a claim under this section, under 1552, for review of his discharge record. And that's the DD-214. And the board would change that. And that's in the normal work of what the board does, is making those changes.
So if you had this record updated, what would happen next? Would his status be converted to no longer discharged?
So again, on that one, it's the first time that the government has argued that disability retirement is not a full separation from the military. But what the government has argued, and what we've responded to, is that just the fact that Mr. Doyen has a had PTSD and had these this medical condition that was combat-induced that caused his discharge, that doesn't necessarily mean he would receive disability retirement. But in this case, that's easy because he was discharged when the Navy determined that he could no longer serve capably.
Okay, so just walk me through what happens next with Mr. Doyen's claim. If he were to somehow successfully get the reasons for his discharge status changed, or discharge state, to reflect that he had PTSD, then how does he go about getting paid?
So the separation code, as Your Honor said, would be changed to show that unfitness, that he was discharged for unfitness, which is, and in his case, it would be a disability retirement. And what happens for Mr. Doyen is, at that point, he would be able to receive the back pay, and that's specifically authorized under 1552, when there's back pay due to a record correction that restores someone to a position that they were supposed to have been in.
He'd have to file a claim somewhere else for the back pay?
Well, if the government resisted paying, I think he would, but my understanding
is... You're saying back pay back to the date of the discharge or separation or whatever we call it?
He would receive
back... How many years is that?
So he'd receive back pay to when he should have been medically discharged. And that will be but it's going to be subtracted from his VA benefits. So he will not be able to double recover or anything like that.
Right. But it'd be 1968 to 2013.
It would be 1968.
45 years.
Yes. And that's because Mr. Doyen served honorably, suffered PTSD, and then was wrongly discharged on a basis that has no support in the record. And I recognize the amount of time, but I would love to say a word about the facts, which is that Mr. Doyen had no hint of a personality disorder pre-enlistment. His enlistment check-in showed clean psychological evaluation. He witnessed horrific things in Vietnam, and he served honorably, and then he was discharged on the basis of a personality disorder that has no support in the record. It doesn't match the diagnostic criteria at the time of a personality disorder. The reasons that they gave.
Just to be clear as to your position, you're saying that even though he did not request this relief in 1968 or any other time in that era, because of the reclassification or whatever we call it, he is entitled to a reconstruction?
Yes, he is definitely entitled to that. And that's what this board, the BCNR, does on a regular basis, is it'll correct these records looking backwards. That was the purpose of the Hagel memo. The Hagel memo specifically focused on Vietnam veterans and
are
said...
they corrected perhaps back to the date when the relief or the correction was requested. Isn't that what the statute provides? Rather than another 40 or 50 years of silence?
So in terms of back pay?
I'm trying to understand the relief that you're requesting and the basis for it.
The relief would be to from this court specifically, would be to reverse with instructions to the trial court to vacate and remand to the BCNR with instructions for that court to make this change that we've requested in the separation code on this form.
The backup argument would be you want us to remand it back to the BCNR to apply the liberal consideration standard in the first instance, right? If we don't want to get into the facts.
Well, that is a backup argument, but respectfully,
Want us to apply the liberal consideration angle in the first instance?
In this case, we don't think liberal consideration is even required. We think that Mr. Doyen can win under substantial evidence, given the complete lack of evidence in the record to support his diagnosis and discharge. And so, either way, Mr. Doyen should, even without liberal consideration, Mr. Doyen should receive relief. And we also cite there's a long line of cases from this court where this court resolved disability retirement determinations on the merits. And Fisher, this court's 2005 decision in Fisher, it reviewed a long line of cases from this court's predecessor.
Just following up on Judge Newman's question, isn't the answer that the Curta memo came out fairly recently, just a few years ago, and Section 1552H was enacted just a few years ago, and so it was on the strength of these new authorities that allowed someone like Mr. Doyen to come in now at this very late stage, many, many years after his service, to request to have his military records corrected to reflect that he did have PTSD, just like, because of medical science's evolution to understand and appreciate PTSD during military service in wartime, that everyone in the past who had served in the military that maybe had suffered PTSD, but it just wasn't appreciated at the time, ought to have their records reevaluated in the face of now better science.
So, yes, the memo and the statute recognized the change in science and our understanding of PTSD, and it required a new standard of review for these types of claims.
Right. It wasn't a situation where Mr. Doyon was just lying in wait for five decades and then decided to spring all this on everyone.
Mr. Doyon was getting rejected from jobs because when he submitted his DD-214 form, the form that we're asking to be corrected, there's a code on it that this court has recognized employers knew the meaning of the code, and Mr. Doyon did not know. And the code said to employers, personality disorder. So he was getting the opposite of the veteran's preference that he was supposed to be receiving. And he had a misdiagnosis for most of his life until it was about a decade ago that Mr. Doyon started to, he was diagnosed with PTSD. And then he was not sleeping on his rights. He very quickly then filed a claim for relief before the BCNR.
Is the question of his entitlement to disability retirement from the date of his original discharge before us?
No. Ask the court to reverse and instructions to give relief for Mr. Doyon.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under submission.